discuss the viewpoints of Imam Khomeini in regards to the resurrection and the hereafter. In one of his speeches, Imam Khomeini has mentioned that you must remember that all of us have another day, the hereafter. Do not doubt this. We have a day of reckoning before us, and everything will be considered and calculated on that day. Man himself should give an account of his acts. On that day, hands shall testify, eyes shall testify. On that day, man shall take account of himself. We have such a day. Now, in this part of his speech, he is talking about very important belief that we as a Muslim and most of the religions in the world, they have this belief that there is a day of hereafter. And all our actions that we perform, we are accountable for those actions. Therefore, we must remember that day, because those who remember that day, their actions are different. When they perform something, they consider the hereafter and they know the consequences which they're going to pay. Either the consequences which are going to happen in this world, and ultimately the consequences that we will be considered accountable for that in hereafter. Ya Rabbana, salli ala Taha al-Nabi wa alihi, sallallahu alayhi. When we help someone, it will help us in hereafter. When we oppress someone, obviously this oppression, we need to answer. If someone does injustice in this world, he has to answer in the other world for what he has been doing. And therefore, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, even in the Quran, when we read the first chapter, Surah Al-Hamd, he says, Maliki Yawmiddin, he is the master of the day of resurrection, means the day when everyone will be gathered in front of him, and the blessings that he has given us, we will be accountable for all of that. And are all actions, these actions that we perform, our hands, eyes, our legs, our body will testify every single thing. That is the day when nothing is hidden, and all the actions that we used to perform, we will see all those things happening in front of us. Whatever we have done, there is a book in which everything is written. And therefore, Imam Khomeini also say that we must remember. Why? Because we are accountable for what we are doing. Therefore, we need to make our actions right. We must reform ourselves before that day comes. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
In the limelight.
Now, 18 months into his presidency, Biden has to claim those Trump positions as his own. Consistency, not reversal, describes his West Asia policy. The fist bump was the least of it, says Phyllis Penny's author in an article published under the heading, "The fist bump was bad, but Biden's West Asia policies are worse." Stay tuned for the details, please. President Biden's fist bump with Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman and the President's up-close and personal handshake with former Israeli regime Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu sparked outrage and cries of hypocrisy from human rights activists, supporters of Palestinian rights, and defenders of democracy. MBS is, after all, responsible for the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi and the war that has devastated Yemenis. Netanyahu, currently on trial for multiple corruption charges, presided for a dozen years over Israeli regime's apartheid system, settlement expansion, war crimes in Gaza, and the murders of several journalists even before Shirin Abu Akleh was killed in May. Outrage was absolutely called for. Symbolism is important, but the fist bump and the handshake were the least of it. Biden's first presidential trip to the West Asia region had a lot to do with consolidating U.S. power and countering Chinese and Russian influence there, strengthening the Israeli and Saudi-led coalition under U.S. leadership and increasing arms sales. The timing had a lot to do with the war in Ukraine and the price of oil at home, with global shortages and price hikes linked to the war-driven sanctions against Russian crude. Biden's trip had a message for all of that. MBS and the Zionist leadership have been eager to reaffirm their tight partnerships with the U.S., following their strategically consistent but symbolically extreme embrace by Trump. Biden's greetings made clear that consistency was indeed his agenda, and that apartheid, war crimes, and murder of journalists would pose no barriers to those special ties between Washington and its favored West Asia allies. But far more consequential were the actions, what Biden did and didn't do during his meetings. He did reaffirm the strategic ties with both Saudi Arabia and the Zionist regime, making clear that human rights concerns, even if mentioned, would have no impact on actual relations and, crucially, no impact on billions of dollars in military aid and arms sales. He did reiterate the pride of place that both the Israeli regime and Saudi Arabia hold in the U.S. government's West Asia policy, their bilateral ties with Washington and their no longer secret ties with each other remain at the center of the U.S. strategy to continue as the dominant global power in the region. The president did say the right words, that human rights matter, that he believes Mohammed bin Salman is indeed responsible for the murder of Khashoggi, and that he still supports equal measures of freedom, security, prosperity, and democracy for Palestinians and Israelis. But what didn't Biden do? He did not condition military sales to Saudi Arabia on ending the war against Yemen, despite the Arms Export Control Act's requirement that U.S.-provided arms be used for internal security or for legitimate self-defense. Like all his predecessors, he did not demand that U.S. military aid be conditioned on the Israeli regime, ending any of its specific human rights violations that keep equality but out of reach for Palestinians. He did not announce plans to cut that military assistance, even though the Leahy Law prohibits aid to any military unit that has committed a gross violation of human rights. And the U.S. admits the Israeli regime military was likely responsible for killing Shirin Abu Akleh. Despite his public assertions about human rights, Biden did not announce or make any moves to actually hold either of these key U.S. allies to account for their violations. When Biden chose Saudi Arabia for his first visit to the region as president, the regime was thrilled seeing the trip as a chance to reclaim its primacy as Washington's favorite Arab country. What MBS wanted was indeed primarily symbolic, a handshake or, in this case, the notorious fist bump, a globally televised reminder of his stature meeting the U.S. president was an equal. He wanted the return to normal optics for U.S.-Saudi ties after Biden's campaign pledged to treat Saudi Arabia as a pariah. The crown prince got all that, but he also wanted some other things way beyond the symbolic level. He wanted continued arms deals, U.S. backing for Saudi Arabia's military dominance as the top U.S. proxy in the Arab world, and a clear grant of impunity for human rights violations, whether war crimes against Yemeni civilians or the assassination of a U.S. resident journalist in the Saudi consulate in Istanbul. And he got all that too. Biden claimed he pushed back, telling MBS directly that he believed the prince was responsible for the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. Then he left it there and turned to business as usual. He could have gone on to say, "And because we hold you responsible for that murder, and because you are largely responsible for the worst humanitarian catastrophe in the world today, the war in Yemen, we are not selling you any more arms until there is some kind of real accountability." In fact, Biden said nothing of the kind. His only apparent request not made publicly was for Riyadh to increase oil production levels to help replace Russian oil and lower global and U.S. fuel prices. What if, rather than urging more oil production, Biden had told MBS that the U.S. instead planned to help provide Europe with massive economic support for a fast transition to sustainable energy to replace its dependence on fossil fuels? And it turns out Saudi Arabia has just doubled its imports of cheap Russian oil at sanctions-reduced rates for domestic use, so it can sell its own crude on the global market at today's sky-high market prices. Overall, the joint declaration celebrates the unshakable U.S. commitment to Israeli regime security. It includes Washington's guarantee of the Zionist regime's qualitative military edge and pledges to preserve and strengthen Israeli regime's capability to deter its enemies and to defend itself against any threat or combination of threats, as they say. And the declaration even promises more military aid beyond the current level of $3.8 billion every year. While that commitment is not so unusual, the declaration then adds something not so commonly found in diplomatic documents, the claim that all those U.S. commitments are sacrosanct. That's a word rarely used to describe political positions. Merriam-Webster defines sacrosanct as holy or immune from criticism. Given the criticism from human rights defenders, Palestinian rights organizers, and anti-war activists that has followed Biden's trip to the region, the notion that continuing U.S. military aid and protection of Israeli regime apartheid will somehow remain immune from criticism seems like wishful thinking on the part of the White House. There were other points of clear agreement. Biden and his Israeli counterparts signed off on an attack on the Palestinian-led BDS, that is, Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement, promising to combat all efforts to boycott or delegitimize Israeli regime, and to protect this regime at the United Nations and the International Criminal Court. And they agreed to allow all Israelis to enter the United States under the supposedly reciprocal visa waiver program, despite the Zionist regime's refusal to allow all U.S. citizens the same privilege. In fact, the U.S. State Department's own advisory warns that U.S. citizens of Arab or Muslim heritage, including Palestinian Americans, have experienced significant difficulties and unequal and occasionally hostile treatment at the occupied territories' borders and checkpoints by Israelis. In 2017, Donald Trump went to Saudi Arabia, where he signed an arms deal worth billions. In 2018, he announced a set of new U.S. policies towards the Zionist regime, moving the embassy to Al-Quds, recognizing Israel's annexation of the Syrian Golan Heights, and declaring the Jews-only settlements across the West Bank and East Al-Quds to be legal. Biden didn't ever agree with the Trump administration's position on the Israeli regime, and he called Saudi Arabia a pariah. He could have reversed Trump's policies on day one in the White House. But now, 18 months into his presidency, Biden has to claim those Trump positions as his own. Consistency, not reversal, describes his West Asia policy. The first bump was the least of it.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Ethics of Salam and Greeting. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the ethics of saying salam and greeting each other when we see each other in the Islamic lifestyle. When we see the Islamic text, we see that there are specific ethics that when two groups or maybe two people are seeing each other, they meet each other, how they should say the greetings and who should say the greetings first, and what is the best thing to perform or do. In that, we see that the first thing, first ethic is, it is said that whenever two people see each other, and we see that there is a youngster meeting an oldest person, or maybe someone who is older in age, it is said that the smallest should say salam to the oldest. Young generation should say salam to the old generation. And therefore, we see that Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says, يُسَلِّمُ الصَّغِيرُ عَلَى الْكَبِيرُ. Whenever a small person, for example, like the one who's in age, smaller, he must say salam to the kabir, to the old age. وَالْمَارُ عَلَى الْقَاعِدِ. And the one who is passing from somewhere and he sees there is a group or someone who's sitting next to him, when he's passing from there, he should say salam to those who are sitting. وَالْقَلِيلُ عَلَى الْكَثِيرِ. And a small group, when they meet a great group, they must say salam to that big group. So this is from the ethics. The first ethic is that Imam Sadiq has said that the youngsters must say salam to the older, and the one who is passing or is walking in the street and he sees that there is a group of people who are standing maybe, or there are some people are sitting, he must say salam to them. So inshallah, when we see our older, when we see our youngsters, even when we see people sitting in the mosque or the street, standing in the street or sitting somewhere, so when we pass, inshallah, we say salam. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of the ethics of greeting and saying salam. We said that when a smaller sees a bigger, they must say salam. It means that if it's a younger, he should say salam to the oldest. If the person is walking, he should say to the ones who are sitting. If there is a small group, they should say salam to the big group. On the other hand, the second thing that we have is that we should say salam in a way that the other person can hear what we have said. And this is from the slogans of Islam, that the saying salam is the slogan of Islam, that the Muslims, when they meet each other, they say salam to each other. And they pray for each other when they see each other. So the second thing is that when we say salam, it should be in a way so that the person whom we said salam to him, he must hear what we have said. And we should say salam to everyone so that it is, because it is a slogan. The third thing in Islam is from the ethics is that we should answer people in a proper way. For example, if someone has come to us and said salam, even in a lower tone, we should meet him in a way with the energy so that he gets warmer or he gets a good feeling from our answer. So whenever we need to answer the one who has said salam, obviously it should be in a way so that they can hear us and they know that we have answered it. The fourth thing is that the answer of the salam should be equal to what they have said. For example, if someone says salam, you just say salam to him. If someone has said assalamu alaikum, you answer wa alaikum assalam. If someone has said, Salamun alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, you must answer, Wa alaykum as-salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. So the answer should be equal to what he has said. So the prayer that he has made for us, we must make the same prayers for them, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/Ian Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight. Colombia is known for its tourist attractions and is full of breathtaking natural sights such as beaches, mountains, deserts, and forests. The South American nation is also one of the few places that give tourists the chance to have an encounter with whales. Every year, from July to October, domestic and foreign tourists flock to Colombia's Pacific coast to catch a glimpse of humpback whales. The large animals reach the coast after traveling thousands of kilometers from Antarctica and southern Chile. But for visitors, there are strict rules to help preserve the area and the whales. Tourists are now being welcomed for whale watching after a two-year hiatus due to the coronavirus pandemic. This is also the time when humpback whales start their reproductive process. Art restoration requires intensive research and training and loads of skill. But imagine the anxiety while professionals embark on restoring rare paintings. Under careful supervision, French restorers are working to give back to 500-year-old paintings their former glory. They were rescued from a fire that engulfed the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris in 2019. These works date back from the 17th and early 18th century. The paintings, including 22 with large format, were temporarily stored in a warehouse and now being restored at an undisclosed location. The fire caused strictly no damage to the paintings, but they have accumulated thick layers of dirt and smoke on the surface after hanging in the cathedral for centuries. Some of the works also have paint loss due to overcleaning that restorers say need to be repaired elegantly.
Africa is taking back some of its greatest treasures stolen by the British back in the 19th century. The Horniman Museum in London has agreed to return the artifacts to Nigeria. These are 72 relics, which include 12 highly treasured brass plaques known as the Benin Bronzes. The bronzes are a group of several thousand metal plaques and sculptures that decorated the royal palace of the once mighty kingdom of Benin since the 16th century. These artifacts were looted from a region in modern-day Nigeria in a British military incursion. They later ended up in museums in Europe and the U.S. African countries have been fighting to recover works pillaged by explorers and colonizers as Western institutions grapple with the cultural legacy of colonialism.
Elite. illegal hunting and hybridization with American crocodiles have for decades threatened their populations, with some species being on the verge of extinction. But there are some people who put their lives at risk to save the natural heritage. A Cuban researcher has released a baby crocodile that was confiscated from illegal hunters back into the wild. It was a happy moment for Etienne Perez, who went waist-deep in the dark water of Zapata Swamp to free Cuban crocs, the smallest known range of any living crocodile species. Cuban scientists were racing for quite some time to save the rarest crocodile. The government has protected virtually all of the vast swamp, widely considered to be the best preserved in the Caribbean. But the scientists say more efforts are needed to save the nature.
Releasing crocodile seized from poachers is really impressive because we return the animal to a free life in the wild. In the case of the animals in the hatchery, we are trying to increase the historical range of the Cuban crocodile and, of course, increase the number of these individuals in the wild.
Cuban scientists estimate that around 4,000 crocodiles continue to live in the wild. But because the area they prefer within the wetland is relatively small, a climate-related disaster, increasingly common now globally, could wipe out the brunt of the population. They say illegal hunting for decades is also threatening crocodile populations. A wide range of cutting-edge digital technology is grabbing the limelight at the 2022 China International Fair for Trade in Services, which is underway in Beijing. The exhibition is featuring a wide range of products, including artificial intelligence, virtual reality, metaverse, and 5G. Visitors can be seen taking virtual reality driving lessons and enjoying scenarios, including different road and weather conditions, wearing VR kits. It's the leading and largest comprehensive fair for trade and services in China. This year, an increasing number of traditional service companies are speeding up their transformations, resorting to smart technologies. The event has set up 9 thematic exhibitions, including cultural and tourism services, education and sports services, hygiene and health services, engineering, consulting, and environmental services. Foam is fun to play with, particularly for kids, but when it's mixed with art, it also becomes a grown-up matter. And that's what a German artist has done, creating a sea of rainbow-colored foam as an interactive art piece and allowing the audience to enjoy themselves and become part of the art. Colors mixed were by Stephanie Luning were turned into rainbow-hued foam cascading down the stairs. The performance was called Island of Foam, version 18. Excited children jumped in as soon as the bubbly sea reached the base of the stairs, delighted to be playing in the rainbow playground. The art piece is made up of largely of water and a food coloring. The artist says she loves working in public spaces and reaching a broad audience of all ages.
Because I like to be surprised by the result myself, and I like to work with this that you never know how it's going to turn out. You have the wind, the weather conditions, the locations, the audience. You never know how the people are going to respond and how the artwork turns out. And that's really what I like a lot, and also how to reach a broad audience.
However, Stephanie says there's tons of work behind all the fun, and cleaning up the mess can be hard. Interactive art is a form of art that achieves this purpose by involving the audience. The immersive art piece is part of the Greenwich and Docklands International Festival, an annual festival of performing arts and outdoor theatre.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Tehran's Saray Gallery takes part in a massive art exhibition in South Korea, bringing Iran's leading and emerging artist to the Asian market. Works from six Iranian painters are displayed at the event, where hundreds of galleries account for more than $50 million in sales annually. Frank Smith reports from Seoul.
Seoul's annual global art exhibition has been reinvigorated this year with additional events and a most certain boost in attendance. The Korea International Art Fair continues an evolution that began with its launch back in 2002. This year features 164 galleries and more international exhibitors than ever before. That growing cosmopolitan experience and this region's growth as an art market hub is what brought a premier Iranian gallery to Seoul.
When we started this gallery, we had the big goal to just introduce Middle Eastern artists and Iranian artists to all over the world. So when you want to introduce artists, you cannot forget South Korea and Far East as well.
Saray had participated in last year's art fair with paintings purchased by local Korean collectors. Expanding on that success at the event and as Iranian artists are growing in international stature, Hassan Saradipour decided to display works from six Iranian artists at this year's event.
Our gallery focuses on the established and emerging artists. This artist, Abbas Nasashamlu, he just want to show that how the nature and how the human can affect to each other, how this experience he can bring it on the canvas, on the paper.
The massive exhibition featured paintings, although there were various multimedia and sculpture installations. As South Korean living standards have risen, more people have time and money to spend on such events. Their taste in art has also become more sophisticated.
South Korea used to lack art galleries compared to other countries. There was a serious lack of love for this level of culture. However, now these events, I think, create opportunities for more people to gain such appreciation.
For the first time this year, Freeze Art Fair in Seoul exhibited works from 110 galleries, including Picasso, other 20th century masters, and contemporary talents. Frank Smith, Seoul.
An Iranian movie wins the grand prize for the best film in this year's Moscow International Film Festival. In its international debut, No Prior Appointment won the Best Film and the Best Actress awards. The movie is a product of Farabi Cinema Foundation and directed by Behruz Shoaibi in Iran in 2021. It is the story of a girl named Yasaman who returns to Iran from Germany after her father's death. A short stay in her father's hometown and meeting those who know him leads her to a new understanding of humans and the concept of death. The 44th edition of the Moscow International Film Festival was held this year from September 4 to 11. Animals, no matter pets or wild, are more vulnerable to drowning or dying in resulting floods and mudslides. A veterinarian school in Pakistan is offering free treatment for animals injured in the recent devastating floods. The veterinary surgery department of Sindh Agriculture University has set up a makeshift animal hospital as flooding hit humans and animals alike in the surrounding area. Volunteers have been providing anything from surgery to medicine and even ultrasounds to the animals free of cost. People from flood affected areas can be seen bringing their farm animals such as goats, donkeys, buffaloes, and cows into the center. The worst floods in history have killed an estimated 800,000 farm animals. But there were many heartwarming videos trolling on social media showing people come to rescue animals being stuck hopelessly.
Iran is famous for its hand-knotted carpets and ancient art which have been loved for centuries and are never going out of style despite changing tastes and increased competition from Asia. Striking geometric shapes that recall 20th century abstract art are what we expect to see in handmade Iranian rugs. But weavers and exporters have been forced to redesign a tradition dating back more than 2,000 years due to numerous problems. Carpet exporter Ahad Azimzadeh says, however, that a revolution is underway. Iranian rugs are known for dense, curving floral designs in rich colors. They were put on display in a recent exhibition that featured a rug with small squares of hypnotic diagonal blue and white lines and another depicting diamond and other patterns in gold silk. Some countries have overtaken Iran in the global market, but many say modern carpets will never replace the traditional ones, which are deep-rooted in Iranian culture. These days, computer technology is impacting every aspect of our life, providing a greater ability to place things, events, and people within context. An Iraqi museum has started using the technology and virtual reality headsets to make exhibits interactive and to bring scenes back to life. Visitors can explore heritage sites destroyed by terrorist groups. Now, using thousands of photographs, a group of local engineers have given a virtual rebirth to five historic sites in Mosul and abroad. Nineveh province. That includes a mosque and its leaning minaret. But this museum brings sites back to life for the people who live in Mosul. Although large parts of the old city remain oceans of debris, authorities are trying to restore historic sites, mosques and churches in Mosul. A private museum along the Tigris River, which opened in mid-June, saw more than 4,000 visitors in its first month.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد دعوتك ربي بقرآني جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسانك ودعوتك ربي بقرآني.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم.
Respected brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRIB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International Schools Network. Now, we will be, inshallah, practicing the first ayah to ayah 5 of Surah Al-Baqarah, okay? Now, let's listen to this ayat.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Alif Lam Mim. Zalika al-kitab la rayba fi. هدى للمتقين الذين يؤمنون بالغيب ويقيمون الصلاة ومما رزقناهم ينفقون والذين يؤمنون بما أنزل إليك وما أنزل من قبلك وبالآخرة هم يوقنون أولئك على هدى من ربهم وأولئك هم المفلحون.
Okay, now let's go on to each ayahs, inshallah. Let's see what we have in these ayahs, okay? In the first ayah, as you see, it's written Alif Lam Mi, right? Three letters. That they are called Huruf al Muqatta'a. The 29 surahs of the Quran Kareem start with these letters, okay? But what is the secret behind these letters? Yeah? Why are they this way, written this way? Just Alif, Lam, Mim. You gotta read them as letters, okay? You can't say Alam. If you say Alam, it is a question. Alam, it means it's a question, okay? But what is the reason behind this Huruf al-Muqatta'a?
God knows.
God knows? Of course God knows. But there are many ideas about this, okay, opinions about this Huruf al-Muqatta'a. But two of them I want to tell you, okay? Some say that these Huruf al-Muqatta'a are like secrets between Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam and Allah Almighty. Okay, that only Allah Almighty and the Prophet knows them. And the Imams.
Will we ever know it?
We don't know them.
Ever?
Ever. It's a secret. Some say like this. But some say no. Some say no, it's not like that, okay? It is a miracle. Look, it means this way. Allah Almighty wants to tell you that, O people, the Quran is made up of letters. Like this, Alif, Lam, Mim. See how many letters do you see like this? Alphabet letters. The Quran is made up of these letters. If you think that the Quran is not a miracle, so go on. Generate a Quran. Generate something like Quran from these letters. Nobody has ever been able to do this. Allah Almighty says in the Quran, Surah Al-Baqarah, inshallah we'll study, فَأَتُوا بِسُورَةٍ مِّن مِثْلِهِ وَدْعُوا شُهَدَاءَكُمْ. Okay, Allah Almighty says, bring just a surah, a piece of surah, okay? Like this Quran. You can do it. You can never do it. وَإِن لَمْ تَفْعَلُوا وَلَن تَفْعَلُوا. They will be never, never, ever be able to bring a surah, a single surah, or a single ayah like this.
From which Allah, point?
In terms of being miracle, like it has teachings, lessons that it has. Literature, in terms of literature, in terms of fluency, in terms of a lot of things, okay? So nobody can bring Qurans like this. I mean surahs like this, sentences like this, all right? So one, the important point, it's better, I think, okay? It's better, this opinion is better, okay? That Quran is a miracle made up of this kind of letters. If you can bring anything like this, so bring it. So it proves that the Quran Kareem is a miracle. All right. So, Alif Lam Mim. Actually, we have two mad here. Let's talk about the Tajweed rules here now. That Alif Lam Mim, we have two mad. One on the top of Lam. One on the top of Mim. In Tajweed rules, we learn that these two mads, okay, or whatever letters we have, the 29 surahs that start with Huruf al Muqatta'a, the mad are what type of mad? Mads are madul lazim. You got to stretch it for five up to six. Five or six, yes? So, now let's stretch. Ready?
Yes.
Hussein Ruhullah, recite this ayah and apply the rule of mad. Madul lazim. A'udhu billah.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Ahsant. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
MashaAllah.
Alif Lam Mim.
Superb. Ahsan. MashaAllah. Perfect. There is one more tajweed rule in this ayah, if you can say this. Alif Lam Mim. There is an idgham, a ghunna sound. Right? Two counts.
Lam.
No. Alif Lam. Lam. When you say Lam, it ends with a meme sound. Then the next letter starts with meme. Meme. Alif Lam Meme. Two counts, you gotta produce a ghunna sound, nasal sound. Alif Lam Meme. Alright? This is important. Yeah, it is idgham mithlay. Idgham mithlay. Okay. So, the next ayah is very important. ذَلِكَ الْكِتَابُ لَا رَيْبَ فِيهِ هُدًى لِلْمُتَّقِينَ. ذَلِكَ, the word ذَلِكَ is used to point for a far place in Arabic. Like we say, that is a book. Or that book. That book, it means that I don't have access to it. I can't touch it. Okay? But can you touch the Quran now? You have the Quran in front of you.
This is.
So we got to say this is. Like in Arabic, we have to say, هذا القرآن, هذا الكتاب. Okay? But Allah Almighty says, ذلك الكتاب. What is the reason? The reason is that there are many points again here, okay? One point is this, that the real Quran, the real scripture, okay? The real one is with Allah Almighty in the heavens. So we don't have access to that. But this is that one, okay? But the real one, I mean, okay? But some others say that this Quran is that much great, okay, for great things, okay? For example, if you want to show the greatness of something in Arabic sometimes, okay, you do not point it to the near, with near pronoun, okay? Like, هذا. You say, ذلك. You point it with a near, a far pronoun, okay? A pronoun that shows a far place, used for a far place. So it shows the greatness of Quran. Okay? This is also a point, okay, here.
هذا القرآن يوحدنا لطريق الخير يوجهنا الله تعالى أنزله ورسول الله معلمنا ورسول الله معلمنا هذا القرآن.
Want to learn Quran at home? Join us in our Quranic class. Let's recite the Quran.
ذلك الكتاب لا ريب فيه. ذلك. The tajwid point here. ذلك. What is the tajwid point here?
مد التبي.
Yeah. It's natural mad. ذلك for two counts. ذلك. Don't say ذلك. We have a tiny or a baby alif, which is called the dagger alif, yes? Do you see that?
Yes.
So don't think that this is a small alif, so we don't have to stretch the sound for two counts, for one count, no. For two counts, you gotta stretch, okay? Thalika. And the next important point here is the pronunciation of the letter.
Thalika.
All right, Fawad? Thalika. You gotta pronounce it correctly. Thalika, not Zalika. Zalika has another meaning. It might not exist even in Arabic. Zalika with Z, okay? Thalika. We have. So, ذلك الكتاب, كتاب, again we have, كتاب, لا ريب فيه, ريب, what مد?
لين.
مد اللين, alright? مد اللين, لا ريب فيه, مد التابعي, لا ريب فيه, فيه, natural مد, but when you stop, you change it to?
ح.
No. فيه it is, yeah. How you will change it to ساكن.
عارض للسكون.
Yeah, مد العارض للسكون. Okay, it means you got to change this natural mad to a longer mad because of making a pause here. So how do you say? ذلك الكتاب لا ريب فيه. Longer mad, yes? For four counts, five counts, six counts. It's up to you. But the point is here, ذَلِكَ الْكِتَابُ لَا رَيْبِ فِيهِ. Allah Almighty says, that is the book. There is no doubt in it. There is no doubt in it. Allah Almighty just says, okay, claims that there is no doubt in it. And this claim is true. Okay? This is true. There is no doubt in it. It means that if you read this book, you will never doubt in it. Because everything in the Quran is a word of guidance. Everything in the Quran is a word that brings you, that enlightens your life, actually, okay? Or there is nothing wrong in it. If you believe in them, you will go to the right path. Okay, there is no doubt in it. All right? You see nowadays that the writers, whenever they want to write books, okay? Whenever they want to write books, in the very first page, okay, of their books, okay, they will write that. If there is any misspelling, if there is any mistake, so we want the readers to let us know so that we could fix them in the next versions. Do they say this way or no? Of course they say. But Allah Almighty says that there is no doubt. From the beginning of the Quran up to the end, if you go, you will never find a mistake in the Quran. This is the miracle of the Quran, isn't it? Yes. So, ذلك الكتاب لا ريب فيه. That we once I think we explained, Ali Nasir, yes, that these six dots, three dots, they are called waqful mu'anaqa. Okay, mu'anaqa. Mu'anaqa means that like they are holding each other, hugging each other, for example, but like putting your neck, okay, your head on the shoulder of the other ones, okay? This is called mu'anaqa in Arabic. But it means that they are always with one another, okay? These six dots, three here, three there, okay? These two, three dots, okay? They are always next to one another. Yes. Means they're always like friends, okay? The head of the other one is on the shoulder of the other one, okay? Like this. They're friends. So, we said that either you have to make a pause at the first one or
second
one. At the second one. You cannot make two pauses at the first one and also at the second one. This is wrong. Either you have to make a pause at the first one. If you skip the first one, you gotta make a pause at the second one. You cannot skip both of them. All right? If you made a pause at the first one, you don't have to make a pause at the second one. All right? So now Fawad will recite this ayah, and he will not make two pauses. He will make one pause, either la raib or on the word fi. So let's recite. Yeah, the whole ayah. Dhalika al-kitab.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Dhalika al-kitab la raib fi. Hudal lil-muttaqin.
Ahsan. Thank you so much. That was nice. There was a little mistake, which was in fi. He didn't stretch the sound because he stopped there, yes, but he didn't. Okay, so thank you so much. That was about this ayah. Inshallah, we'll be back, okay? Let's recite a salawat.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad wa ajil faraja.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools. ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن.
IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.